Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding, His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life, it's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious, think well, advance good. This is Q.
You know, we've been trying unfettered freedom since the 60s, and we've decided that license and kind of libertarian independence, we thought that was going to be the good life. And I think we're already starting to get to the end of a cycle where people are realizing, you know what, this is not that great. And yeah. I feel like when that's happening, there's actually the possibility of a new openness to what the gospel has to say.
Welcome to Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons, and today I'm so excited because I get to interview James K.A. Smith, which sounds about as official as my respect is for him, but he's a friend, and so I call him Jamie, and many of his friends do as well. But he's a great philosopher, and he's going to have a lot of insights, I think, today that are going to be particularly interesting to you if you're a serious Christian who's trying to consider, how do I be faithful in an environment or a culture that seems to be shaping me sometimes more than I'm being discipled or shaped. And so we're going to dig into what that looks like. And this is the kind of conversation that at Q, we've been interested in having for over 11 years now. And Jamie's been a part of that with us, giving talks over the years at our Q events. And this most recent talk he gave at our most recent Q conference was just met with being one of the top talks at the event. People just responded and said, Jamie always challenges me to think more deeply about the kind of life I'm living, what my influences are, whether I'm really shaping culture or whether the culture's shaping us. And so today I'm going to get to ask him some of those questions that he really starts to reveal in what has been his most recent book called You Are What You Love. And it's just another in the sequence of books that he has written. A couple books you've probably heard of by him, especially if you're in the church or somebody who's been reading a lot about kingdom mission, is Desiring the Kingdom and Imagining the Kingdom. And he really helps us start to unpack what it looks like to think about kingdom practice and how our own habits are truly telling about the kind of people we are becoming and the kind of people that God's called us to become. So a lot of Jamie's focus is around formation. And so as I talk to him in just a moment, I just want you to appreciate who this man is. He's currently a professor of philosophy at Calvin College. He's trained as a philosopher with a focus on contemporary French thought. And his platform has made him really become an engaged public intellectual and cultural critic. He loves music. He loves the arts. He really has, as you'll see in our conversation in a moment, a real deep appreciation for St. Augustine. And so without any further ado, join in on this conversation I'm having with Jamie Smith.
Well, Jamie, it's great to be in conversation with you again today. And you and I have had the great opportunity of just having to have these conversations over the last many years. It's been fun to just see the depth at which you're thinking about culture and thinking about the church and formation. And your latest project, You Are What You Love, The Spiritual Power of Habit, that book, I've just seen it over the last year influencing people so much, and it's being referenced like all over the place from like really popular speakers, you know, who you're probably not used to just taking some of your books and running with it like that, you know, to in the highest intellectual circles, people referring to it as a really important contribution. And I know for you, this was just the latest way of you kind of stating something that you as a life calling, it feels like you've been trying to help us all see about the importance of understanding the things that actually form and shape us. So for those who haven't read it yet, will you just describe You Are What You Love, really what you're trying to get at, what the heart of this message is?
Yeah, for sure. It is a little scary for academics when people start taking your ideas seriously, right? You sort of like, oh, wait, okay. But it's encouraging. I would say it really grows out of, as you said, this longtime passion of mine, I think. Maybe one way to describe the starting point is, I guess for a long time, I've been trying to make sense of how and why evangelical Christians have actually been so assimilated to our broader culture. That might actually be one way of talking about, like, what, how is it that we just sort of fell into these patterns so that we look and live like everybody else around us? And I started to realize it's not so much because we were like convinced by bad ideas or we were sort of hoodwinked by the messages of culture. I actually think we sort of got suckered by the rituals and practices and what I call the liturgies of our culture. And we didn't even realize that as we were participating in these rituals and rhythms, we were kind of learning to love the wrong things. And I think the reason we didn't realize it is because it's all going on under the surface. It's sort of under the hood of our conscious awareness. And we don't even realize that we're kind of practicing our way into disordered loves. We're learning these habits. We're catching, these disordered, longings just by kind of going with the flow and not thinking about it. So, yeah, what I'm inviting people to see is it's not just a matter of being aware of what you think and what you believe and what you know. It's taking stock of your life and asking, what am I learning to love? Yeah. What are my hungers being sort of trained towards and seeing, is that the gospel? Am I learning to love God and what God wants for his world? Or am I kind of covertly learning to love stuff or power or pleasure or whatever it might be? Does that make sense?
It does. And I think it gets to the heart of the challenge we have in the church today is you're really pressing into a layer deeper than just what we see at surface value, but it's about our desires. It's about what's causing those desires, and it's ultimately about how are we being intentional about the ways we're allowing things to shape us. And so for most busy people, most people just kind of trying to keep their life on track, trying to do their work, trying to love their friends and family, as you point out in this book, this is something that doesn't just happen by chance. Like, you're going to have to be intentional because you're fighting this uphill battle against a culture that's constantly trying to shape us into its own image. And how much more intentional then would we have to be shaping, you know, our children and ourselves into the image that God has for us. Will you speak a little bit about the idea, though, that you communicate in here about the medium is the message? I mean, something, when we began Q 11 years ago now, the Marshall McLuhan, that idea of the medium is the message was so clear to me that this was something the church was not understanding, you know, that we were so quick to just adopt any form that was happening in the world to try to communicate essentially the message of the gospel, but not always assessing and reflecting on the medium themselves and how those are also shaping people. So could you just share a little more about that idea for those who've never thought of that before, about the containers in which our information goes and how that says something about the information itself?
Yeah, it's actually fun to think about. I think you and I have both come out of conversations. I think we both sort of owe a lot to the influence of Chuck Colson and are indebted to what would have been this kind of worldview analysis of culture, right? And what happened is if you bring that sort of worldview lens to cultural critique, it sort of primes you to be focused and fixated on the content, right? You get worried about, okay, what are the ideas? What are the false doctrines and things? And that's all fair and good. But what will happen is if you're so fixated on sort of worldviewish concerns about content, you'll miss the fact that actually it's sometimes the very form of our media practices. It's the very form of the rhythms and rituals we go through that is doing more to us. So the McLuhan point is, look, let's take an example. You go to the mall. It's not just whether or not you're buying bad things. You know what I mean? It's not just the content or stuff or material that you are acquiring and intaking. There's something about the very form of the practices that is covertly and in a subterranean way, making you want certain things and training you to become a certain kind of a person. I think obviously the world of social media and the smartphone really kind of transforms this, right? And what interests me in the sort of critique of our attachment to our phones is less a matter of how, you know, what we're looking at, though that's obviously a fair concern. Mm-hmm. But there's something about just the very form of this practice of me as an individual hunched over this screen, looking for entertainment, distraction, liberation or something. And in a way, I could be like reading Christian websites and apps all day, but there's still something wrong with the form of that practice that's disconnecting me from others, that's
right.
isolating me from others.
Yeah, and I know for me, as I think about like a pastor or church leaders, one of the simple ones that I think people can understand is when you're in a church service, for example, using the medium of like video technology where they're, you know, shooting the worship leader that's on stage leading the group in music, and they're showing a close up of a worship leader on the screen, that medium itself create separation between you and that particular pastor leader. It also makes that person more of a celebrity. Like it puts them into a light because they're on a screen. Yes. And it actually changes the way we think about like what we're actually supposed to be doing in that time, which maybe we're singing a good song and we're trying to concentrate on praise. And yet instead that message is creeping in that person's actually more important.
Yes.
They're kind of famous. They're kind of, I'd like to be on that stage. I wish I could be that person. Our kids see that, and it starts to drive like all this stuff. And you're asking us
and it's
to
not
think
because anybody's right. And no, and it's not because anybody is saying that, right? There's no, nobody is communicating the message. The message is in the very form of the thing. I do think the way we do church deserves its own kind of audit in this respect. Because so what I would say is, for example, the concert is its own kind of repertoire, right? The concert is its own sort of liturgical thing. And when we go to a Chance the Rapper concert, or we go to a Bruce Springsteen concert or so, right? There's a whole set of expectations, and really I'm there to be entertained. So that there's a weird sense, even though I'm part of this huge group and we're focused on this person on the stage, in another sense, the concert is there for me. Like, this is about you entertain me, right? Well, when we unwittingly and perhaps unintentionally just import that form into the church, we don't realize that all of a sudden what is supposed to be a God-centered, theocentric, outward focus on God, we've sort of, without even realizing it, imported this form, this medium, that still makes me think this is about me. And I would love it if we had more conversations amongst Christian leaders just asking ourselves those kinds of questions.
This is Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons, and we're in the middle of a conversation I'm having with James K.A. Smith. I just refer to him as Jamie, who's an incredible philosopher who really is challenging us on how we're thinking about the way the culture is actually shaping us, and how do we live in such a way that we're actually being formed by the things that should most deeply matter to us as Christians. Let's continue on. Begins with these kind of conversations, I think, for people to just become aware that this is actually shaping them. It's shaping the people they're responsible for, you know, but you take it all the way to the very personal level. You talk about us all needing to have like a friend, like from history, you know, and for you, it's St. Augustine. Talk a little bit about his influence on you and really why it's so important that we have these figures, these people throughout history that we can relate to, that we can try to understand how they were grappling with some of these issues. Is it because it helps us understand that what was taking place, you know, centuries ago is still taking place in the human soul today, and it gives us some comfort that what we're experiencing, you know, isn't all that new?
Totally. At least that's a big part of it for me. So I am an absolute fanboy when it comes to St. Augustine. So I can't be very objective about this, but it is in a way because when I read Augustine, I feel like he's reading my mail. Do you know what I mean? Like So for those who might not know, so St. Augustine, one of the giants of church history, one of the great doctors of the church. He's an African. He's from North Africa, like contemporary Algeria, lived in the late 300s and early 400s. So in a way, his world couldn't be farther away from mine. And yet when you read, say, his Confessions, and he's sort of looking at the disorder that's in his own soul, or he's thinking about how he can learn to love God and not just think the right things about God. It's like he's a absolutely contemporary companion. I know for me, and this might resonate with you too, when you talk about how it can be like weirdly encouraging to realize that Christians for millennia have been struggling with the same things. So Augustine, right? He was kind of one of the first sort of rock stars in Christianity in a sense. And what's so interesting is that even after he's been a Christian for years, he writes about the dynamic of ambition, for example. Mm-hmm. And he says, man, you know what? When I do what God calls me to do and I do it well, I always have this struggle because then people see me doing it and they congratulate me and they praise me and it kind of goes to my head and I really, you know, I sort of get off on that. And what am I supposed to do with that? Well, maybe I should just not do things well to avoid that temptation. He says, no, that can't be right. And so you see this great Christian leader who's whole corpus, his whole body of work is focused on the love of God and the heart of God, is constantly, his whole life, struggling with the dynamics of ambition, wanting the praise of men, being honest with God about that. And so, yeah, I think one of the reasons why it's such a blessing for contemporary Christians to find these ancient friendships, it might be John Calvin, it might be Thomas Aquinas, it could be all kinds of people in the history of the faith, but it gives you just a little bit of release, a little bit of liberation from the tyranny of the present, right? Like you get outside of our 24-hour news cycle and you learn something about Christians having believed elsewhere for years and struggling with the same things. And I do think it can be uniquely encouraging. By the way, is exactly why my next book is entirely on St. Augustine, because I just think he's such a gift to the postmodern church.
Well, and you have a gift at helping interpret some of that I know, you know, most people might not sit down and read The City of God, and yet you have this ability to help us, like, work through that, understand what's being said, how it relates to today. Like, I love how you did that with Charles Taylor, and How Not to Be Secular. What a great book that every single person should read. I mean, 125 pages or so. Incredible book. Anybody listening to this, go buy that book as well, because you'll find it gives you a guide to understanding at a deeper level what's happening in our culture. And Jamie, let's face it, people are more confused than ever right now about culture. Like, there's so many questions, and I think that's a ripe opportunity. I mean, just sort of putting your philosophy hat on as you look at time and look back throughout history, I mean, are you sensing that the moment we're in, 2017, in American culture, and the kind of questions people are asking, the kind of ways that it feels we're more divided than ever, are you sensing an incredible opportunity in this moment? Are you down about this? Are you bullish about what God might be doing through this moment?
Yeah, a little bit depends on which day you ask me. But I think for the most part, I think the stance is one of hope and expectation. And it's a little bit of not a silver lining as much, but so I do think that there are new, really deep challenges that we have to be honest about. And I think when you name that kind of polarization and dividedness and the fracturing of our republic, as Yuval Levin has called it, I think, yeah, that is a serious concern. But I do sometimes hope and wonder whether actually people are going to experience this frustration in such a way that it will actually open them up to reconsider the divine, right? Like, I think that there are going to be openings. It's the same way, you know, we've been trying unfettered freedom since the 60s, and we've decided that license and kind of libertarian independence, we thought that was going to be the good life. And I think we're already starting to get to the end of a cycle where people are realizing, you know what, this is not that great. And I feel like when that's happening, there's actually the possibility of a new openness to what the gospel has to say and to finding freedom in binding ourselves to Christ. So, my stance is generally one of hopefulness. So I think some people worry that that's just being naive, but it's not optimism, it's hope. And it's hope that's really rooted in the confidence that the Christian faith has had perennial wisdom to offer society, and people come to Christ. And I just feel like if we keep putting our best, most creative hats on in trying to articulate the Christian faith in ways that are thoughtful and winsome without just being wishy-washy and mushy, I actually think we will get more of a hearing than we might expect.
Yeah, I feel the same way. So I'm encouraged to hear you say that. And I'm finding more and more people are starting to catch that glimpse. You know, it's important to step back from the outrage of the day, right, on social media to take a pause and to really understand what's happening underneath that. But just final question, as a person who thinks deeply about the world and going all the way back, you know, 17 centuries to Augustine, and you understand how things change and how a lot of this takes a lot of time to seep in. I mean, do you sometimes feel like a voice crying out in the wilderness? I mean, do you just feel like you're seeing some truths? You wish more people would see it the way you're seeing it, because it's true and it's just pure truth, and they're not seeing it, but we know if they could see it, it would literally change things. I mean, is there a frustration that you kind of personally, when you're just alone with God, one-on-one, that you kind of have to contend with about, man, is this really making a difference? Are people really going to ever get this stuff?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know if I've ever quite thought of it that way. I totally get what you're saying. And maybe what surprises me is I don't feel that way. And I actually feel quite encouraged that I don't think I'm a lone voice, actually. I feel like oftentimes what my work is doing is just putting into words what a lot of people sort of feel and intuit. In fact, I would say one of the most encouraging things I can ever hear about a book is somebody comes along and says, yeah, you know what? I read your book, and it's like, you said exactly what I've been trying to articulate for so long. So I guess I take a lot of encouragement that I don't have any illusions that this is a vast majority, but I get to travel around the country a lot, and I meet people in almost every corner of the country who are ready to sign up for this vision, who are carrying it out in local communities that we never see on the news or hear about in social media. And I feel like there are a lot of encouraging pockets. And I guess I'm particularly encouraged because I see a lot of young people who resonate with this. And maybe it's because I teach at a college, and so I get to see 20 somethings all the time, and I see them getting the ideas, and it gives me encouragement about the future. So yeah, it's having friends, you know, in a way. That's what Q is about too, is fostering these networks and communities so that you don't feel alone about that.
Right.
And I feel like we've been nourished by those kinds of networks and friendships too.
Yeah. And I think as you mentioned, college students, like seeing young people go, man, I've never heard people explain to me the way Christians think about these things. It's like they've never been aware of it. And when they become aware of it, they just light up, because they're like, this is bigger than I ever thought it was. And you're doing that for so many people. You've done it for me. You do it for people within this Q community. So just thank you for your constant contributions. We'll be praying for you as you keep writing, keep discerning what God has for you to communicate and say and interpret for us. And we'll look forward to continue to read your next projects.
I so appreciate it. Thanks so much, brother.
If
you've enjoyed these conversations and some of the topics that we're taking on this podcast, I want to invite you to join us in person at Q 2017. This is our annual conference, April 26 to 28 in Nashville, where 2,000 leaders will be coming together from all over America and global cities around the world to discuss and learn what it means to be faithful in our moment. You can learn more about the topics we'll be taking on, many of the different panels and conversations we'll be having, as well as experiences that you'll be able to enjoy at qideas.org/Q2017.
Well, I hope this has been interesting for you. I hope it's engaged you to think, probably at a 30,000 foot level, about the kinds of things that are shaping us, the kinds of environments, the way culture is constantly working on forming us into a certain kind of person, and to realize that part of the hope that we bring to the world is that we're actually countercultural. We're living differently. We have something to offer because our lives look a bit different. They're a bit odd, a bit curious. But it doesn't just happen. It happens through our churches. It happens in our families. It happens with complete intentionality. And so I want to encourage you, if you like this, I think Jamie's book is an incredible book to really ask some of these deeper questions. And his book, You Are What You Love, The Spiritual Power of Habit, is available anywhere and a great read for people to read. If you're a part of a church leadership team, maybe part of a discipleship group, a small group, just even reading it with good friends or maybe a spouse would be something I would encourage you to do, because we as Christians, we've got to think deeply. We can't get off the hook just thinking we're not being shaped. We've got to be intentional about how we are shaping ourselves so that we have something to offer to the world. So I look forward to our next time together here at Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons. Hope you have a great week. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.